From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
It's Denny, Dave, and more. Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's 5 o'clock refresh. It's brought to you by Frost Brew Coors Light. And what? We got a caller on the line? Dan in Hawaii? Why is Dan calling from? Oh, wait. It's Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn, Atlanta Falcons head coach, calling to talk to us about Cam Chancellor. DQ!
What's up, guys?
Not much, man.
Yeah, we do miss you.
Well, I always enjoyed connecting with you guys, and I thought with news regarding Cam, man, he's a really important guy to me, and I'd love to share some of my insights about him.
It's pretty fantastic to get a chance to talk to you, and Dan Quinn's with us here on the Venue Kings Hotline. What are your memories of coaching Cam, who was... And I don't want to talk about it like he's the past tense, because he's obviously going to go on and have a fantastic life, but it appears that his playing career might be done. What are your memories of him as a player?
And if it is, he is impactful, literally, as he was on the field. He was and is as strong an impact off the field as a leader. And so whatever, interest he's going to get into, he's going to be outstanding, because as good as he was on the field, he has a presence about him when you're around him off the field that just gravitated coaches, teammates, fans to him because of his intent, his nature, and he's such a cool guy.
Yeah, Coach, I could sit here and go on and on about his versatility and all that, but I was just talking to somebody else about him. He's one of those guys, and I don't know if you got this too, but he makes you feel like $1 million. Like, you're the only guy in the room. He always gives you a nice smile, and he seemed like maybe he was a little bit shy too, which I really appreciated.
You know, it was kind of like he was like, for a lot of the players, he was like big brother. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, hey, man, you better not keep talking that way. I'm going to get my big brother. But at other times, you know, he had like some wisdom to put down to, you know, some of the younger guys who are up and coming, or a guy who was across, you know, same time, same year. Like, he didn't mind having the uncomfortable conversation. And not a lot of players can do that and still come off in a real genuine and caring way. And so that's why off the field, if I could tell you, you know, what an impact he had, I would still be coming up short.
Hey, Coach, tell us about, I thought when he got that first extension, that was like 2012-13, he had maybe struggled a little bit in pass coverage. And then I thought after he got that contract, I mean, it was never a problem for him. I don't know if you saw it that way, but tell us about how he developed into a pro, because, I mean, gosh, the guy was a fifth round draft choice.
Yeah, and I think it was the size and length first that, thought, okay, could this happen? And it so impacted me. It had an influence on, you know, here in Atlanta and selecting Keanu Neal, of a guy who had the strength of a linebacker but also had the length and the speed, you know, to be able to guard tight ends. And as you know, like, how good the tight ends are, that was a matchup that we wanted to make sure that, you know, he was always ready for that challenge, you know, regardless of who the tight end was and where they're at. That was one of the things that I think was probably didn't get spoken about as much, Dave, in terms of the impact that he had. Okay, here's a really good tight end, and if we're going to play man-to-man, that's Cam's matchup. He was always up for the challenge. Like, he was ready to get it on all the time, every time, no matter who he was playing.
Well, and Coach, the other thing too, you know, I was talking about this earlier today, that like, for defensive coaches, the biggest chore, I mean, job number one, is you want to make sure you got matchups, right? And for that guy,
right.
I mean, he was the range that he could play in, and I put it this way, like, he could play from 5'10", 195 to 6'7", 330, because he could take off offensive linemen, and he could play the deep half of the field. That must have been a tremendous luxury for you, you know, knowing that, look, this guy, you can pretty much leave him out there for any situation.
And a lot of times when you're making, like, teaching technique tapes, oftentimes you choose a linebacker to show how to set an edge on a pulling guard or a tight end or a fullback. On more than one occasion, we used him as the example of how you go set an edge, whether it was against a fullback, a pulling guard. And so those examples where you teach that, even to the new group coming in, to the next group coming in, those teachings, he showed up all over the place, from tackling, edge setting, you know, the physicality that you want to play with, man-to-man coverage. He showed up all over the tape.
Yeah, you mentioned Keanu Neal, and it sounds like Cam Chancellor had an ongoing relationship with him where he was helpful to your linebacker there, or your strong safety there.
And he definitely had, and that's, I guess, part of what I'm saying off the field, the impact he has to pay it forward to the next guys and to the next guys. And the way hopefully Keanu will pay it forward years from now is to do the same thing to help mentor another rookie who's coming into the league and getting going. So even though they're not on the same team, you guys know firsthand, you know, the brotherhood amongst NFL players at times. And that was just another example of those two and the connection that they have. But, yeah, I know firsthand the respect that Kiki has for Cam.
We're talking right now to Dan Quinn, the defensive coordinator here for the Seahawks on those two Super Bowl teams, 2013-2014. I'm going to put you on the spot, Coach. Do you have a favorite hit of Cam's? We go through that playoff game against Carolina. I think it was 2014 when he was jumping over the line of scrimmage and he had a pick six. He's also had some highs. Do you have a favorite moment of his that comes to the front of your mind when you're asked about his best play?
I would say there's going to be one that doesn't involve a tackle, but we were playing against Arizona. And I was thinking about one of these edge-setting techniques, and there was a pulling guard who came to take Cam on. And usually when an offensive lineman goes to take on a defensive back or a linebacker, advantage goes to the lineman. Well, in this case, the advantage went to number 31. And so for all time, that is how you deliver a hit, the physicality, the explosiveness that goes with that. And then I'd have to say his pick six against Carolina in the playoff game was one, you know, I can remember, you know, vividly watching that in the press box to get that interception and to take it all the way back, you know, where he was about to, he could have ran 150 yards back. He was that kind of strong and that kind of way to go. And he had an excellent interception in a playoff game against San Francisco that he must have went up, you know, well over 10, 11 feet to go pick it. And those are just a few of the memories of mine with him. But my respect is for lifetime, that, you know, the player he is, the man he is. And, you know, he's definitely one of a kind.
That first play you were talking about, Coach, that's the meat wagon play. That was when the ambulance had to come on the field and get him.
Well,
I know we're not supposed to joke about that.
I think
you're not bringing me into this.
No, Coach, I'm not bringing you in this at all. I'm being a jerk right now. No, I just
it's a veteran savvy on the part of DQ.
I know. Look at that. Well, that's why he's a head coach. But no, I mean, not only that, and you don't ever want to injure anybody, obviously. But man, it's just amazing what he was able to do. And you know, it's funny. I remember coming in the league and going and them showing us the highlight tape of this is how to do things. And you know, for me, it was like Fred Young and Keith Butler and yep. guys like that. But yeah, that's got to have a huge effect on the younger guys. And I got to imagine when guys come in and look at Cam Chancellor, just physically, some of the rookies and whatnot, that just they were in awe of him.
When he came in as a rookie, he already had like a veteran presence about him. So he earned people's respect so quickly. So by the time the season, even started, in 2010, like he had already had some respect. We had a good safety with Lawyer Malloy, and he's there, and you know, somebody that everybody loved and respected. And so right away, people knew this guy really has the makings to be not only a good player, but to be a good leader as well. And he came through in that way at the highest level.
We were fortunate enough to be able to watch the secondary with Sherman and with Earl Thomas, who's kind of now the last of the Mohicans among that group that you were the coordinator here for. How good was that secondary, Coach?
They were outstanding. And the communication that took place amongst them, the physicality that they, you know, played with, and for you guys, you would know this more than fans and everybody else, but the style and attitude in which they practiced with helped set them apart. And so to have Cam and Earl, two classic safeties in their own right, come through in the same draft, I think that's a pretty remarkable draft, you know, for safeties. And they both have certainly left their mark at the position, each of them, you know, the way Earl plays, you know, the ball hawking style he plays, you know, the middle field defense with, and then Cam in the way that he can be used in different ways down in the box, guarding tight ends, the physicality that he plays with. Both those guys have really left their mark in their own way, which I think is a really cool tribute to a player. They did it in their own style and their own fashion. And any time a player is saying, you remind me of a, you know, fill in the blank as a player, I think that's pretty remarkable stuff.
Coach Quinn, what do you think? You know him better than most. What do you think Cam does with the rest of his life? Do you think he's meant for coaching? I mean, he's got so much wisdom to impart, but that's kind of a tough transition for a player to make. What do you think Cam does later in life?
You know what? I know whatever he will, I'm hopeful that it involves a leadership role, whether that's running his own business, if that involves coaching someday, which I think he would be excellent at. But whatever it is, my hope is that he has a chance to impact people, because that is one of his, you know, most amazing gifts, this connection that he has to others. And like you said, when you're in his presence, you really feel special. And that's a gift that he has, and he's able to share that. So my hope is that whether it's in business or in coaching, whatever it is, he's going to be outstanding.
Dan, I'm just wondering what it's like to be a head coach in the NFL. And I ask you that because I know you were here. I'm curious what you learned from Pete Carroll while you were here in Seattle. And also just maybe some of the things that we wouldn't know about being a head coach, the time constraints and all of that.
Sure. Well, number one, it's an absolute blast and it's an honor to do it. You know, I know there's just 32 franchises. So to get to, become a head coach here in Atlanta, man, it's awesome. And it's men like Pete and players like Cam that, afforded me this opportunity that I have, to get a chance to become a head coach. So my gratitude and respect for those two, amongst others, in the Seahawk organization, that gratitude is, as high as it can go. I'd say the most, like coaching and playing, the best parts are game day and all the decisions that have to go into that and the game management and all the way down to who's active, who's inactive, play selection all the way through. Those 3 hours on Sundays, Mondays, Thursdays, whenever they are, intense, love it, the speed of it that it goes, that's as good as it gets professionally for me is those game days.
Coach, it almost makes me want to go into coaching at age 54 because, you talk about how much
a spot for you.
Yeah, yeah, I would be like the ball boy or something maybe, but no, I just
it's a spot,
Yeah, there you go. But it just you mentioned all the guys. Like now, you got Matt Ryan there. You got a chance to be around Pete and Russell Wilson and guys like that. I mean, that's got to be really rewarding. And I know this from coaching high school football. Like, you affect people's lives so much and they always remember their coach, and what a cool job, and what a great group of guys you get to be around. That just kind of struck me, and I just thought I'd get your comments on that.
No, I appreciate that. And the schematic and tactical part of football is fun, but the thing that's always drawn me to the game, it's the relationships with players and coaches that you get to share, and the intensity that goes with it, the brotherhood that's created amongst being on a team. And I love being on a team. And so the group that we're with in Atlanta now, they have this connection to one another and know that love they have for one another so they can play even harder for one another. Those are things as a coach that you really appreciate. So it's a fun place to be. And you're right, man, coaching, it's as fun as you can imagine, challenging, all the things wrapped up emotionally into one.
He is Dan Quinn. Coach, you've always been great and really, really generous with your time. It's really cool to watch the success you've had there as a head coach. And I know that in Seattle, there's times that the Falcons and the Seahawks go head-to-head, but there's nobody that's ever rooting against Dan Quinn. You've been an awesome dude. And I think the fact that we're grateful for you taking the time to talk about Cam, and I think the fact that you're willing to do that speaks to what kind of player he was for you here in Seattle.
No doubt. And much respect to you guys always. Have a great summer, and we'll see you this fall.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, and we got some breaking news. Wade LeBlanc has signed a contract extension with the Mariners, and the nitty-gritty is that his salary for the rest of the season becomes guaranteed. He's got almost $3 million next year, and then there's three different club options that the Mariners will have the choice of exercising. This is a really cool story for a guy who's been designated for assignment seven different times. And when a player is designated for assignment, it's essentially the team saying, we're going to move this guy. If you want him, come and get him. And he's gone and not reclaimed his career, but he's found a permanent home. And the way he's pitched for the Mariners this year has them convinced that he will be a successful and component of their rotation for at least next season and not shutting the door on future additional seasons. He's been a really cool story.
33 years old and a guy that kind of got, I don't want to say the fountain of youth because it's not like he got a whole bunch of speed back on his fastball. 86 miles an hour is what he told us he throws on the top end. But you know, Jerry DePoto saw this coming a long time ago, Wade LeBlanc. It's interesting because I just remember looking at him going, I don't really, you know, and obviously it's an untrained eye, but what do you see in this guy? And, you know, maybe it was some of the stuff he said and then whatever Jerry saw. But he's going to be one of those guys, though, that I think we're going to think all year is this sustainable until the very end? Are people going to figure him out because he, you know, is he like Jamie Moyer? Because that's who he's being compared to. That's a pretty lofty comparison, maybe not fair to him. But I feel like he's always one of those guys. Well, let's put it this way, Jim. He's a guy that you would say you could hit because of the lack of velocity.
Yeah, I really don't think that's the case.
I know.
Last night I went and I hit some balls and you know with my kids. And we were at a little league field in Issaquah. The fences are 200 feet. Mm-hmm. And I maybe hit 3 out of 20 out, and this was just with my kids lobbing them in. I joke around, but I'm just saying that of all the pitchers, you know, you look Wade LeBlanc though.
Oh, really? I thought you were being serious, thinking that you at age 60 could hit a major league pitcher.
Yeah,
I'll be darned.
There is Jim was taking poetic license.
Also, I can beat up a bear. Okay.
So. No, but isn't there a little part of you, Dave, that thinks like Jerry Rice? He's talking at 55, like he could come back, and I know that you, in your heart of hearts, know that you couldn't come back and play NFL football. But isn't there a little bit of you that thinks maybe just one play that I could get out there and make something happen?
Not anymore. Not anymore.
Here's the other thing, though. Dave's actually played professional football. You played for the varsity baseball team at Redmond
High School. Yeah, Redmond High School there at Hartman Park.
Go Mustangs.
Go Stags.
There's a little
green
bit
of the mighty trees, gold of the sun, strength
there was
for the
no point
to come.
In your life where you could
courage
have played,
to fight but, another day, Redmond, hail to thee. What?
There was no point in your life where you could have hit major league pitching. There was a point in Dave's life where he could play professional football.
This is sports radio. I mean, just give me license to talk a little bit, would you?
Okay.
All right. Wait, where were we?
We were talking about Wade LeBlanc.
He's a poor man's Jamie Moyer, isn't he? I mean, don't you look at him, and it's a great story because you look at him, he's going to turn 34 next month, and I'm really happy to see that he's getting that the Mariners are making a commitment to him this year and next, and I'm with you. I hope he's going to be part of that rotation next year.
This is one of the really cool things that happens in sports, where a guy who has been, whether you call it a journeyman or he's bounced around, something clicks for him. And you're not quite sure what it was, because it's not like Wade LeBlanc throws 5 miles an hour faster than he did last year. And it might be that he's healthier, he feels better, or maybe it's something in his approach that's clicked. But something clicks for that player. And then you get to watch them be more effective than anyone expected him to possibly be. What, he was with the Yankees earlier this season? And he got let go by them coming out of spring training, is that
right?
Yeah,
he wasn't there very long, and he wasn't very happy about it, too. When Dave and I talked to him at Edgar's, you could tell that it was like, yeah, that was kind of a blip in my career.
And he ends up coming here and becoming a part of a rotation where, look, the Mariners didn't have a ton of options. They didn't have a ton of depth, and I don't want to say they were desperate. They were desperate a couple of years ago when they got him for the first time, where basically everybody was hurt, and they just needed somebody to come in and fill innings. And you come here, and he's been really good. And you will ask the whole season, and we'll probably be asking next year, is he able to do it again, even if he finishes this season strong? But that idea of a career, whether it's a rebirth or something changes, it's one of the things that happens in baseball that's fascinating, where you have guys, the variability from 1 year to the next, and there's kind of the whole thing of, like, is it possible that he could remain at this level this entire season? Yeah. It is, and those things do happen in baseball, and it's awesome when it does.
Doesn't that make you feel better that it will happen, that the Mariners made that financial commitment? Because DePoto, they've gone over all the numbers, and they've seen everything. Now, you know, there was the outing. Was it the last time out against Boston that he didn't pitch very well?
That was the one where he went against the knuckleballer, and after, what, he won a 1-0 game
Stephen Wright? So, I mean,
and then a week later, it was 14-10 that the Mariners lost?
Yeah, not good. But DePoto also mentioned that to us, too, where he said, you know, guys like that, when they have a bad outing, it's going to look really bad.
I believe he said it'll be a little louder.
A little louder. Yeah, it was much louder there at Fenway Park. But no, that 1-0 game, though, when he outdueled the knuckleballer here in Seattle, where he retired 22 straight batters, and basically he's been really good. Rosmo Ramirez gave him the opening that he needed, and so here's Wade LeBlanc taking advantage of it.
It also speaks to something that Jerry DePoto told us. And I think it was the question that he was asked, and he makes his weekly appearance with us on Thursdays, was, do you believe in chemistry? And his answer was, I don't know how you get it, and I'm not sure how you create chemistry, but I'm smart enough not to screw it up when you find it. And with something like Wade LeBlanc, can he sustain it? But I'm not going to bet against him sustaining it. I'm not going to get in my own way by saying, I don't think he can do it, or I'm not sure why. I'm not going to get in my own way with that, because if it's not broke, don't fix it. And in fact, try to keep it in place, which is exactly what they're doing. They're guaranteeing his contract for next season. They'll pay him $2.75 million. And that's a great bet. Like, if you're just viewing what you've seen so far, you've seen half a season from him, and they ask you, would you bet $3 million, which isn't all that much for a starting pitcher, that he'll be able to run this back? That's a really good bet.
Do you think, is Jerry getting into that, Jerry DePoto, the GM for the Mariners, getting into that range where it's like Schneider, where it's like, well, if he thinks so, then yeah, we'll go along with it. I mean, right now, the streak that he's on, and you made a joke about it, Danny, that, you know, just go make trades because you're hitting everything, you're doing right. And yeah, it makes me feel a lot better about Wade LeBlanc, that they just put that amount of money and that amount of commitment into him.
Isn't it fun to see pitchers, too, rather than hard-throwing guys? I mean, I know, and we love watching Diaz, and we love the guys throwing 95, 96. They're always flashing that up there. Boy, he reached 98, 99. Well, it's nice to see that you can still pitch and get guys out. And actually, it's probably more fun to watch the Marco Gonzalez's. Well, I shouldn't say more fun, because I really enjoy watching Diaz, too. But there's just, I think playing behind a Gonzalez and a Wade LeBlanc is probably more fun for the guys that are out there, because they know that he's pitching to contact. And I saw some stat where it's like another month where baseball's had more strikeouts than hits. And I don't necessarily think that's a good way to go. Now, you love it when Diaz is out there doing it and when Paxton's doing it. But really, if you're trying to entertain people, you're trying to win. But if you're trying to entertain people and get the kids involved, you want to see more hitting, more contact.
Yeah, apologies to the kids. I don't care if the kids are involved. I want the team to win. Like, I really don't care how it looks. I really don't.
I'm just talking big picture.
Big picture.
Like, if you're the guys running baseball, what you're looking at for the future, I understand what you're saying. However they get the outs, it doesn't matter. Whether he grounds to third or strikes out looking.
Here's the Mariners have a farm system that's not really well regarded in baseball. They have a starting rotation right now that's not all that deep. Velocity is extremely expensive. Like, either in contracts or in talent, you have to give up to get it. You've got to find different ways to get that. And I think Wade LeBlanc, along with Marco Gonzalez and along with Mike Leake, are examples of how the Mariners have been able to do that. And that's what you want, is someone that can find value. That's really, at the bottom line, what you want with the GM. And I agree with you. The fact that Jerry's put together, like, exactly what you're saying, that it's not all strikeouts. It's not, hey, we went out and got the hardest thrower or paid for the highest priced free agent or bought Chris Sale and then David Price like the Red Sox did, or Rick Porcello, like all of that talent. Like, they've done it on a budget. They've been really good, and they're competing with the super teams.
Yep, and that's the thing. I just think that Jerry has that kind of cachet. I'm sorry, I was looking at 525. I didn't know you were coming to me. You caught me by surprise.
Well, I think Jim was laughing at my super
the
team.
Super team.
Oh,
the super team!
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. We'll keep telling you about Wade LeBlanc's extension, and maybe Jim's going to interrupt Channon next.
Now, your Mariners Insider Report, presented by Mazda of Everett.
Felix pops his fist!
Here's Shannon Dreher.
Well, today is a very good day for Wade LeBlanc. He's starting today, and while James Paxton had a bobblehead on his start day on Sunday, Wade LeBlanc doesn't get a bobblehead. He gets a contract. Has just agreed to a contract extension through the year 2019 with club options through 2022. I'm hearing it's a lower base deal, but with numerous incentives. Most important thing with the move, the Mariners have all five starters returning next year. Tonight's lineup is as follows. D. Gordon, Gene Segura, Mitch Haniger, Nelson Cruz, your DH and cleanup hitter, followed by Seager, Healy, Spanzanito, Guillermo Heredia. Then you take a look over on the Angels side, Shohei Ohtani off the DL and into the lineup. He will be the DH, batting sixth. Pre-game show comes your way in 30 minutes. Hi, Jim.
What? No, wait a minute. You're supposed to say I'm Shannon Dreher.
I got you.
No, you're supposed to say I'm Shannon Dreher. The heck? How are you? Do you think you're funny?
No, yes. did I catch you off guard there?
Finally, you were funny, Shannon. You were very funny. Very funny. So
what you got?
Were we surprised about the Wade LeBlanc contract?
Yeah. This is definitely a feel-good story. I mean, Wade LeBlanc is somebody who's bounced around the majors, played over in Japan, and the kind of player that can really appreciate having a little bit of a home. And I guess he had his family here at the ballpark earlier today, and he's been rewarded for what he's done for this team. I think it's great news.
Does this make us feel even better that it's sustainable what he's doing? Because I don't think the Mariners would make that financial commitment if it wasn't.
It's not the hugest commitment, but yeah, they want to bring him back. So I think that they feel good about it. He's changed. Jerry talked about his cutter being better and how kind of analytics have helped with him. And also, he has that flexibility. He can still be that swing guy. That doesn't mean they're not going to go out and like try and find somebody to upgrade the rotation if that piece is there. If he needs to go back to the bullpen for a little, it's something that he can do. So there's so much flexibility with this. It's just really a good match.
I'll give you the same question that I gave to Danny O'Neill earlier. If the Angels have a runner on second in the ninth inning and they trail by one run and Mike Trout is the batter, would you walk him knowing that he would be the winning run on first base?
Yes.
You would?
Yes.
Okay, well, can you elaborate? It's sports radio. We're trying to, you know, get an explanation from you here. I know that you answered the question sufficiently by saying yes. But can you play along with me, please?
Yeah, but don't you think Shannon's like, why do I need to go out of my way to provide content for your show?
Yeah, I'm busy, like, coming up with content for my pregame that just had a wrench thrown in it with the signing. Even though the numbers, some of the relievers, Justin Upton has hit very well, I'm still going to take my chances with him in that rather than Trout.
All right, Shannon, I've got exciting news I'm going to leave you with.
Yes?
I think I've successfully negotiated Bark in the Park ticket buying. So I'll be there Thursday night.
With River?
With River, yes.
All right, we want to see him in the booth.
I don't think they'll let me take him there.
Well, Blauer's dog got to go in the booth.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
All right, I'll bring him by.
I know people.
Okay, thanks, Shannon.
All right.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn, because knowledge is power.
I was late that time. What We Learned brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Guess I didn't need to announce it because we're not on TV.
Yep.
You tried to do like an atomic elbow drop there.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and I was two beats late as opposed to my normal one beat late. Jess!
Guys, you know what? On that note, we'll start with learning we still have a lot of work to do.
Really important words for everybody. We want everybody to be safe this holiday weekend, so keep this in mind. Please drink responsibly.
Are drunk people supposed to say that?
Yeah. At least if I still drank, at least I'd have that excuse, right? Please drink responsibly.
Hey, since we're in the mood for pulling out clips, can we do the Professor unplugging the robot?
That's probably the best one. That one they're going to have to find in the back room there. This was during the B-Dubs ad for Buffalo Wild Wings. Please drink responsibly. And here it was. This was, 2 years ago at spring training?
This will never be not funny.
We do have the professor. John Clayton is with us. And looking ahead to exactly what everything that's happened, I've got a bad echo in my ear, Harden. Do we have the professor?
I'm right here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, John. John.
You can.
What? We do have the professor.
We could play that every day.
That is never not going to be funny.
Why did I keep trying? Like I mount
being
up
a professional.
And go for it. No, that's definitely not what I was being. Like, has anybody ever heard? We were just talking about this. Has everybody heard Bob Stelton do anything like that? Like, is it just that Bob's built different, or Bob's a professional?
Has
or
Bob ever spoken through an echo of reverb like that?
I think if Bob had, he would have handled it better than you did.
I do too.
We were just talking, Jess, and see, Rod, you've been on the board with him. Does Stelton ever screw up? And even when he does, if he misspeaks, he'll say rather and then correct himself very smoothly. He's unbelievable.
He's too polished.
I don't know.
He's great with the transitions, though. I mean, he just throws meanwhile in there and then just keeps moving.
He's fantastic.
Is that the key to his radio success?
Yeah.
Meanwhile.
Meanwhile. Try that on the golf show sometime.
You know what he is? He's like the high-velocity pitcher and we're the Wade LeBlancs. Like, we get it done with wit and guile.
Oh, don't insult Wade like that.
Ouch. Jess!
We also...
You're one of us, I thought. See, there it was. There it was.
I am, and we are really good at making fun of ourselves, so I'm right there with you. We also learned what Wyman thinks about Dan Quinn's favorite Cam Chancellor play.
That first play you were talking about, Coach, that's the meat wagon play. That was when the ambulance had to come on the field and get him.
Well,
I know we're not supposed to joke about that.
I think
I'm not bringing me into this.
No, no, Coach. I'm not bringing you in this at all. I'm being a jerk right now.
That was a courtesy laugh he gave you.
That's not true.
That is true.
That was a
courtesy laugh. I know courtesy laughs.
But you don't know Dan Quinn.
That was a laugh of like, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
You might get me in trouble.
I guarantee you that Dan Quinn has said meat wagon before. I bet you when they watched that clip, he said, here comes the meat wagon. Anyway, good call by you. Said you weren't going to suck him in there with his veteran wit there.
Veteran savvy that he showed that was there. I always think in my head, like the little soundtrack, which probably shouldn't be playing in anyone else's head because of all the things, was when the meat wagon comes out, I think, bring out your dead.
The Monty Python.
Monty Python. Bring out your dead.
You're sick.
Yeah. Bring out your dead.
Oh, man, that just reminded me of the Knights That Say Knee, and I'm really sad that hockey is over because the Golden Knights allowed us to play that all the time.
I saw some guy in Mexico with a Golden Knights sombrero.
Yes. Oh, really?
Like, yeah. Yeah. Fully fledged. I was like, oh, you're a diehard fan all 1 year of it?
Well, man, was it self-branded or did it look like it had been marketed by the team?
No, it looked like he painted it himself.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for him. We finally learned today how Danny feels about the hot dog eating contest.
I have no interest in any of the stories that are about it, any of the coverage of it, how much is bet on it, who wins, whether it's Joey Chestnut. I'm mad that I know who Joey Chestnut. I think it's gross. I think it's disgusting.
See, he's lost weight now, and so he's on his hot horse.
Oh, I see.
Like junk food and gluttony? No. Yeah, Mr. Orange Theory over here.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I miss Fat Danny. I do.
You miss Drunk Danny, too.
I miss Fat and Drunk Danny.
God.
You're right, don't you?
No, well, I just want what's best for Danny, and I don't think being fat and drunk is good for him.
Well, so, if I could take one or the other, I want the drinking back before the eating poorly.
I don't know about that, Jim. I don't know if you're being the best teammate as you like to.
I'm not, but I want to drink with him again.
I always say this though; it really makes me feel wanted. Like when I hear that Jim wants to drink with me again. Yeah. Like I don't feel like, oh, that's me. I'm like, oh.
Well, you've drank with him. He's just not drinking.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like he's dragging you down into the depths.
No, no. Mm. I feel. Yeah,
it's going to happen.
Yeah, it probably will.
Yeah, I know. Some point. I think there's hope there.
We're being honest. I don't know if hope's the right word.
Opposite of hope. Okay. Come on, stop it.
It is funny though. I hadn't thought about that because I don't think it's any. I didn't like the hot dog eating contest even when I was fat. I didn't like the hot dog eating contest when I did it.
Wait a minute. Excuse me. You're admitting that you're not fat and you've lost weight. You finally did it.
No.
Jim's got you.
I'm sure I'll find it pretty soon, wherever it is.
He's backed you into a corner.
Do you guys ever think about, there's the thing that grosses me out. What happens after the hot dog eating contest when you eat 73 hot dogs? Where does it go?
I was thinking, do you think it's like a snake where you can see it move through your entire digestive system?
Maybe. I mean, if you filled a bag with 71 hot dogs, I mean, that's going to, it's nasty.
I mean, how many of you had one sitting?
I don't know. I've never even thought about it.
No, because he's a normal person.
No, I know, but
when you're full.
I've maybe eaten three hot dogs.
Yeah, I think I've had three.
Anytime you go somewhere where there's a hot dog. Yeah, you get it.
Want to thank Ryan Roland Smith for joining us, Dan Quinn, Jessamine McIntyre is our producer, Curtis Rogers on the board. For the three of us, be safe, enjoy the 4th, happy 4th of July.